I'd like to remind all participants this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the IRTPC call on the 22nd of May 2012. On the call today, we have Mikey O'Connor, Avi Doria, Barbara Knight, James Waddell, Bob Mountain, Matt Serlin, Angie Graves, Michaela Nalen, Chris Chaplow, Philip Corwin, Simonetta Bataiger, and Kevin Erdman. From staff, we have Marika Koenigs and myself, Nasty Peregrine. And we have apologies from Roy Dykes and Paul Diaz. I would like to remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you. And Jonathan Tenenbaum has just joined the call equally. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie, and good morning, good afternoon, folks. Welcome to the IRTPC working group call for May 22nd. As per our custom, does anyone have any updates or changes to their statement of interest? If so, please raise your hand now. Okay. And following that, has everyone had a chance to review the agenda, which was sent to the mailing list and is posted in the right-hand column of the Adobe chat room? Does anyone have any recommended changes or additions to that agenda? Okay, thanks. We'll consider that adopted. So there has been a flurry of activity, I guess maybe a small flurry of activity since our last call. I know that we had a pretty productive sub-team one or ideal process sub-team call yesterday, led by Simonetta and attended by myself, Michele, and Mikey, that went about an hour and not quite an hour and a half. And I noticed also that Bob, just before this call, Bob sent his recommended language for the initial report to the list, so I doubt anyone's had a chance to review that unless they were part of that sub-team, but let's just go ahead and dive in with item number two on our agenda, which is an update from Simonetta on the ideal process, and she can give us a recap of what we covered yesterday. So, Simonetta, if you're available, take it away.
Sure. So you want me to recap an hour and a half of intense conversation in 5 minutes or less, right?
That's right.
You know, maybe 7 minutes.
That's the standard deal.
So we had a very good call yesterday and actually I think made a lot of progress on a number of our items, which I am not sure. Marika, the email that you sent out this morning or yesterday about the new language that we have drafted for what we want to include in the report on charter question A, it went to everybody, right?
No, this is Marika. That went only to the sub-team because I first wanted to make sure that it actually captured what we discussed yesterday. So I haven't sent that out to the whole group yet, but I'm happy to pull it up if you think appropriate after you've maybe gone through this the document I've got on the stage.
So we basically came up with a first draft of what we think we would like to include in the draft report for publication for Prague, which contains both the current version of our process draft, including the steps that you see on the screen right now, and also some open questions that we have identified and came up with the options of what people might find helpful to discuss that we want further feedback on, for example, on the question of whether or not this should be a standalone policy or if this should be a part of IRTP or if this should be a kind of a hybrid where there's going to be a transfer policy created in IRTP as well as the this new change of registrants piece are two subsets of this new transfer policy. So, and then the final item that was discussed in yesterday's call was the question of whether or not the locking periods that are in the existing IRTP policy should also apply for a change of registrant. And James came up with a very nice overview of the options of when this may or may not be a good idea to do and what the status quo is and what we recommend should be done moving forward. And both of these items should obviously be included in the report and also be items that we want to point out to the attendees at SAC as well as to the work group and obviously anyone else who wants to comment on them to give us further feedback on this. So what you're seeing on the screen right now is a summary of these pieces that Marika has put together in form of a first draft of this piece of our report. And we haven't had a chance yet to look at this within our sub-team, but we can take a look at this now and see if someone in this larger working group already has feedback for us on items that they have questions about or don't understand or feel that should be changed. And obviously all of this is a draft, and we're hoping to get more feedback and comments in this group and in PRAC to then come to a refined version that we can use moving forward. I hope that captured everything we were discussing yesterday. Anyone want to jump in and add if I forgot something that's important?
I see applause from Mikey, and I'll second that here as soon as I find the little icon. So, good update. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Bob. I guess just two questions. First, are we proposing here that the 60-day lock be made be mandated and made mandatory as opposed to, I believe it's optional now, right?
No, Bob, that's not what we're proposing at all. We're not really proposing anything. We have put together a summary of, status quo versus what we think should be done, and we're not adding that we are in consensus on all of these items. There is one use case where both James as well as Mikey felt that it might make sense to put a lock in place, which is when, not when the registrant changes, but when the registrar and the registrant change over both at the same time in a certain case. So, but that is one of those items that definitely we all are looking for feedback on, and I have a feeling that you may have an opposing view on this one, and I myself also see that this is restricting something that isn't currently restricted, so there will be comments on that particular item, I'm sure. But so we've basically just summarized what the status quo is, and we tried to come up with a pros and cons for what could be done moving forward and why. And that's really all there is right now. There's no conclusion or consensus, or it's not worded as we all feel strongly that it should be done this way.
Yeah. Okay. I guess my impression, right or wrong, would have been that was a fairly significant topic, and probably one for its own discussion, rather than, you know, including in a process document like this. Although, you know, obviously, I can see why, you know, there would be different perspectives on the whether or not this makes sense to mandate or not. James, I had another point. Do you want to just respond to that one, or should I continue?
Yeah, before we go too far, just responding to that point, what we tried to do, Bob, is boil down all of the possible permutations, and there were several. And we discussed, I think, we walked through just about all of them, and either we determined that no additional protections were necessary or that the existing protections were fine, except for there was just this one particular use case, which is when there is a transfer between registrars immediately following a change of registrants. And we've just, we're not declaring that there's a consensus on this, but I think that we wanted to capture that someone in the working group or on the sub-team anyway felt that that was a special case that needs to be looked at. And it's distinct from all of the other cases. And I think that, you know, a lot of folks point to GoDaddy's 60-day lock practice, which we declared was a fairly blunt instrument, and this would turn it into more of a scalpel and less of a machete, because it would go after that specific use case. But, there's a lot of information, a lot of things happening very quickly here, and I think we're recognizing that were putting things down on paper for people to comment on, not to declare that these things are settled by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. I understand. I guess I'm commenting that I would ask that we have further discussion on that particular point. That's one that jumped out at me. So before I move on to my next point, though, anybody else commenting on that one?
This is Mikey. I'd like to jump in on that one.
Go ahead, Mikey.
Let me try and explain what we're trying to do here, because I worry about knee-jerk reactions. The scenario we're dealing with is the scenario where somebody captures someone's credentials and essentially hijacks a domain name. And what we're trying to prevent is a domain name hopping too far away from the rightful owner too fast. And in most cases, these changes of control happen, at least in this scenario, in this scenario, all changes of control, all change of registrant, happens in the same registrar. And so as a result, in most cases, if somebody's domain is hijacked, they can talk to their registrar, and the registrar, as they often do today, can resolve the dispute entirely within their organization. The circumstance we're trying to slow down is the one where a domain is hijacked and moved across registrars. And so what we're trying to do with this 60-day lock is trap the domain in the gaining registrar for 60 days so that if it's actually stolen, it's not moving very rapidly across a whole series of registrars. And so that's the intent with the lock. The premise is that a lot of changes of control can happen inside of a registrar. But when it transfers across registrars, we want to slow things down. That's all.
Okay, thanks, Mikey. I see quite a queue going here. Bob, do you mind if we continue on with this topic before moving on to your second issue here?
No, I totally support that. No,
okay,
definitely.
So Simonetta, please. Simonetta, you may be on mute.
You are completely right. I was on mute. I had a point. I wanted to add a point to this that I'm not sure if I expressed it well on yesterday's sub-team call, and I just wanted to make sure that the idea is captured as well. From my point of view, when we're looking at this whole hijacking thing, this to me, in comparison to how often we have a regular transfer with completely legitimate functionality, is the exception and not the rule. So when I'm designing a new process, I would like to design the process to make it easy and simple to use for everyone who's trying to just get the thing done that they legitimately want to get done. And I feel that we have done a lot of work in previous IRTP work group where we actually designed the process to resolve the hijacking situation. So from my point of view, and that's actually one thing that I would like to see added as a comment to our own document here, it is sufficient to have the hijacking resolution mechanisms that would grab or would be applicable to any transfer that also happens to involve a change of registrar along the chain to resolve these situations if and when they do happen and come up. And I would prefer to leave the existing status quo alone, that you don't mandate a 60-day lock just because a domain name has just changed registrars. That's my point of view, and I'm not sure if this whole entire work group will agree with this, but I will want to make sure that it's included as a comment and considered when we come to our final recommendation.
Okay, thank you. I see a green check mark from Bob. Next in the queue is Michele.
who naturally disagrees. I would just wanted to echo what Mikey put it very, very well, and if anybody didn't understand what Mikey was talking about, I can go through it again. But, I mean, the idea from my perspective is that if somebody wants to change registrant, control of a domain name within a registrar, let them do it. We can have checks, we can have balances, we can keep an eye on that, but they can do it as many times as they want. If you're moving domain names between registrars, then I would be fully supportive of allowing a change between registrars, but once it moves to the new registrar, it cannot be moved again for 60 days. That would remove a huge number of headaches. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Michele. I can see a green check mark from Matt Serlin, and note that you were echoing some of Mikey's statements. The next in the queue is Barbara.
So this is Barbara. I guess my question would be, I'm definitely in favor of being able to restrict the transfer of domain names from one registrar to another for 60 days after change of registrant and a change of registrar. So, and obviously the policy allows for that as well. I guess my question would be whether or not that would be systematically enforced either through the use of EPP status codes or at the registries.
I'm not sure. If I understand the question, I would say I'm not sure that we thought that far down the road.
Okay.
Does that sound right? I'm looking for the other folks in the sub-team to see if anyone has a concrete answer for Barbara's question. I don't think that we captured that part.
Was this specifically relation to keys? Was it... James.
I think
Hello?
Barbara is saying that we would lock the name at the registry. Am I understanding you correctly?
Well, I think the question would be is, you know, whether or not we would obviously not have, you know, really insight into, you know, a change of registrant, and it sounds like from what Michele was saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, Michele, is that you wouldn't necessarily have an issue with, you know, additional changes being made so long as it stays with the same registrar?
I've no problem with that whatsoever.
Okay. So what I'm wondering is, though, if it makes sense to, and I guess it's locking a domain and preventing it from transferring can be accomplished in a couple of different ways. I know that, you know, VeriSign as a registry does restrict based on some historical and legacy items. We do restrict the transfer of a domain name from one registrar to another systematically for the first 60 days after the domain name is created. Obviously, if we were to be asked to do that after a transfer of a domain name from one registrar to another, that would involve some additional development. The other way to be able to, I guess, systematically enforce that particular restriction would be at the registrar level to have the registrar put the client transfer prohibited status on that domain name at the time that, you know, it's transferred or a modification is made. So I guess my question would be, you know, whether, you know, how you would want to actually implement that. And to the extent that there would be development required, then we just need to keep that in mind when we're asking for this particular provision, if it ends up going through and becomes, I guess, approved. We would just need to keep that in mind from an implementation perspective to make certain that all the parties that could be impacted by this would have the appropriate time to be able to implement that change.
Right. Okay. Good point, Barbara. And I think that you're correct in pointing out that there would be some implementation concerns if this were adopted, and there's a couple of different ways to actually enact this this recommendation. Let me I see we've got a queue here. I'm going to do something that's a little unheard of in ICANN circles, and I'm going to go ahead and preempt the queue because I believe Michele and Mikey have very eloquently expressed their positions on this as well as Bob. But I am looking at the clock, and I would say that Bob had another point, and I would like to dive into that as much as possible and hopefully wrap that up quickly so that we can move on to charter question B and C in the other subteam. I think that the way we bring this conversation in for a landing is to say that we have, I think, two, maybe three, but at least two sides to this issue that we need to capture in the report. We need to engage the folks in our report, the public commenters, and the workshops as well. So I don't think that we're going to have any flashes of insight or particularly persuasive, if not hypnotic, statements on this call that's going to bring us all to a single point of opinion on this. So I think we need further work on this. So right now what we've done is we just kind of set some boundaries. I think we need to discuss it further. Bob, can you raise your second issue, please?
Yes, with great reluctance I move on because I did have more to say, but I'll defer to the chair.
You and a lot of other folks. So I'm trying to equally disenfranchise everybody equitably.
I share everyone's pain. I guess the only other comment I had on this was that, and again, I compliment. It's a very thorough, I think, well constructed document. So my comments are only just meant to continue the good work that's already been done. The other comment I had on, it looks like on page one, bullet one, both the losing registrant as well as the gaining registrant need to authorize the change. I would just want to be sensitive to the timing of that. Taken on by itself, it might appear, one might assume that that would be at the time of transfer, and, there may be scenarios where the approval would be offered ahead of time. So I would want to make sure that, or I would request or propose that the documentation the verbiage that's finally written would accommodate that scenario as well as the immediate transfer scenario.
So meaning that they don't necessarily have to occur simultaneously or at the time of the change, that we can pre-authorize these.
Exactly. A losing registrant would have the ability to pre-authorize a transfer and not be required to act, confirm, or do anything at the time of transfer, but yet the transfer would be automatically approved on the losing registrant side. That would be my...
I see a lot of folks stepping all over themselves to agree with you on that. I would say that we should probably try and capture that in this language. I have a queue of Michele and Mikey. I would ask gentlemen, let's please keep our comments brief, and we will go through the queue. So, Michele, you're up next.
Just for the record, since I know it's hard to capture hand signals and stuff, no, that to me makes perfect sense, and that would help anybody who wants to trade in domain names. Personally, my objective with any changes to policy in this space is to increase the security and remove a lot of the headaches surrounding the security aspects, the hijacking, the negative stuff. There's also, outside of the entire ICANN circus, you can enter into agreements with companies to do things that don't have to follow specific timelines and everything else. So I don't see why you can't have that, so that if I say that I want to sell my portfolio of domain names, I'm giving Bob's company my carte blanche permission to do that, and I'm agreeing to it, so those domains get listed, so that Bob, if Bob can sell those domains for me really quickly, great. I've already given him permission. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Mikey?
Sorry, I was on mute. This is Mikey. Just to add on, I think another concept that we may want to fold into this conversation is the concept of a proxy, where Bob's company or Simonetta's acts for the registrant in those circumstances where the registrant wants to give up some of this security in exchange for ease of use, and they sign a contract with the registrars that offer that kind of service. I think that may be a way through this dilemma because, I think what we're going to want, if we don't figure out a way to allow both of these things to happen, we're going to have essentially a pissing contest between two sides, both trying to prove that their use case is prevalent. And so I think we need to figure out some way to accommodate both.
Thanks, Mikey. That is a very intriguing idea. I think it probably warrants a little more work. It's going to require a little more work, but I think that's warranted. I think it's an interesting idea. A question would be, would not the admin contact be a good use or way to designate a proxy? I don't know. This may be something that we would need to talk a little bit further, but I like the idea. I just wanted to put myself in the queue both as a placeholder and then to say that I think that a lot of folks are agreeing, if not expanding what Bob commented on originally. I think that the key thing here from my concern was that we, and I know a number of folks expressed this as well, is that we wanted to make sure that the gaining registrant or the new registrant needed to authorize this change so that no one could assign domain name responsibilities to parties who were unaware. And I think that that's captured. I think that the timing of these things is really, there should be some as much flexibility as possible. I think the proxy idea is something new, but worth exploring as well. I wanted to close this up, but it looks like Bob has another comment on this. So go ahead, Bob.
Okay, thanks, James. I'll make it brief. I also agree. Mikey's proxy idea is a good one. It definitely merits, I think, further, a longer look. To Michele's point, I totally agree with Michele that the commercial agreements can be valid. I would just, if possible, try to avoid apparent conflicts between policy and commercial practices. So if we can have both in mind, great. And I would strive to do that. It would sort of, I think, make everyone sleep better at night if we didn't appear as if there was a hard distinction between what was actually happening and what the policy said. So that's my only interest in trying to synchronize these two. That's all I have.
Okay, thanks, Bob. So that's the change of control, or I guess we're now referring to it as change of registrant process. I think Avery made a point in the chat room, and forgive me, Avery, if I'm misstating this, but we need to probably standardize some of our terminology before this goes into our initial report, and that would be to note that we are referring to change of control as change of registrant, and that we are we have new terms for gaining registrant, losing registrant. I think we had old or new, or one may have to go back and see what we had, but otherwise, I think so we can standardize some of the language. And we have a couple of questions that are still open. There's still, I think, the separate but combined issue, which is down a little bit further. It's actually, I think, the second to the last page. So I think that there's quite a bit to take in. I would encourage the folks on the working group to please spend some time with this document. And, Marika, would we be able to release a revised version here to the larger mailing list here in relatively short order?
This is Marika. You mean from what is up on the screen now?
Yes.
Yes, if maybe if sub-team members can just review it and send in their comments if possible by the end of today, I can share an updated version, including some of the discussions we had on the call now tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I think the two main topics are relative to step five, that is proving to be an area what needs a lot more discussion, and then the item with the first bullet point, which needs to indicate that pre-authorizations should be allowed, and that we're looking at something called proxy authorizations, and then the standardization of the language.
And this is Rick. If I can ask for one other thing, then indeed on the position on the locking or not locking, if those in favor and those not in favor of that position can maybe send some rationale, because I think it would be helpful indeed in explaining those two positions to maybe include that, to facilitate people commenting and understanding the different viewpoints better.
Okay, that makes sense. Simonetta?
Sorry, I always forget to unmute myself. I have a question for the whole work group, and my gut feel is that at this point where we are right now with a version of a process drafted and the open questions phrased the way they are, I wonder if we still want to continue working in that sub-team or if we're at this point where we gave input to the work group and it now is a task of the entire work group to take this and move it forward. I don't know, and I want to check in with the work group and ask for everyone's feelings on this one.
Green check marks, which I'm not really sure, because you kind of asked an either-or question, so I'm not sure what green is supporting.
Whole work group.
Okay. In that case, I will agree with that as well. Aubrey, go ahead.
I mean, at this point, I would think that it has been delivered to the group, and unless the whole group sends it back to the work group, and unless they feel they have any incomplete items that they felt they still needed for, they could, you know, stop functioning as a work group unless somebody says, oh, let's send this back to the work group. But at this point, I would think that generally the work's come into the main group, and we got to work on getting the, you know, the bits of consensus determined and the initial written. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. And I think a lot of folks who had their green check marks would agree with that, and I agree. And I think that this is a good finished product for that sub-team. Simonetta?
Okay, then I just wouldn't want to schedule another sub-team call at this point, but we're using the mailing list to refine these open or to get the comments in that we just spoke about, but unless someone now brings up something that they feel strongly should be brought back into the sub-team, then I think this sub-team's work is for now finalized. And it might be something that we may want to pick up after Prague again when we've received feedback, but at this point I don't see a need for extra calls outside of Tuesday calls.
I agree. And I know that's been a challenge getting everybody's schedule aligned, but I think that until we get some further feedback both in Prague and then we get to a point where we start having some impact statements, that working group or that sub-team is probably complete. And I'd like to be able to say the same thing about the other sub-team. So can we now move on to item number 3 with an update from Bob, including his recommendation languages that snuck in there just under the wire right before this call started off. So, Bob, could you perhaps, I see Marika is loading these, and perhaps you can bring us up to speed?
Yes, thanks, James. So apologies for the late date. Last week I had some unexpected travel, and things just got away. But we did manage to get it in before the call, so hopefully you've all received it. And if you haven't had a chance to look at it, it's up there on the screen now. Essentially, before and also to the other point, we may have inadvertently already made the jump to the entire work group. I may have misunderstood, but I thought that the recommendations at this point were going to be worked with the entire work group rather than with the data gathering sub-team. So my intent was to just work that at that level. So if everyone's in agreement with that, we'll continue that way. If people would rather have us iterate it within the data gathering sub-team, I'm perfectly okay with that too. But I'll assume we're expanding this at this point. So I think the introduction is essentially what we're obvious. It's maybe self-evident, but we will be looking for public comment from this. So these, both from the work group and eventually from, from the greater community. So anything we're putting here is simply a starting point. Recommendation number one is essentially noting that the IRTP is to both ensure ensure security, but also to that it evolves. It's an evolving the domain transfer process evolves to meet new and previously unforeseen threats to the transfer process. At this time, there is no time limit on the form of authorization once it has been completed by the registrant and finalized. So as we've all agreed, there is a risk that an unexpired FOA could then be used in a subsequent transfer. We've also noted that many registrars have already implemented a time limit on their FOAs, even though it's not required. However, we have noted in our survey that, in fact, an extremely small percentage of registrars report ever either having experienced a problem or heard of a problem with domain transfers due to the time limitations of an FOA. This applies for both registrars that have implemented the time limit and those that haven't. The number of incidences is still extremely small. Therefore, my proposal is that we do not make this mandatory, but we elevate it to a best practice where documentation on how to do a time limited FOA will be available on the ICANN website and will be included in ICANN training materials for registrars, but will not be mandated as a requirement for registrars. So I'll stop there on recommendation one, and open it up for feedback.
We have one agreement there from Mr. Corwin, and we have one hand raised in the queue. Mikey.
This is Mikey for the transcript. I'm not sure that as I read this, I have to parse the logic. But it seems to me that I wish I was a better logic guy. I don't think that the pieces in this paragraph support each other. I don't think that the fact that very few registrars have ever experienced a problem with a transfer necessarily supports the conclusion. And again, I don't have the survey in front of me, but my recollection from the survey was that there was pretty broad support for time-limiting FOAs amongst those who were surveyed. So I guess I'm looking at that recommendation and my initial reaction is that it's been watered down a bit and I'm not terribly supportive of it.
James, do you want to just go through the queue? Do you want me to respond or how do you want to handle it?
Let's go through the queue and then I put myself at the end as a kind of a place mark and then we'll try to address all of those.
Got it.
Okay, Michele, you're up.
Okay, how do I word this? I'd like to add a couple of things. First of all, I'm quite happy with that recommendation, but with one caveat. Well, actually, I'll give it two. Well, one is to explain to Mikey why I'm happy with it, and the other is to make it a little bit more to bring it round full circle. I would add something in here that if this be reviewed after say 12 months or 24 months. At the moment, if a registrar time limits their FOA, theoretically, well, actually, there's no theory about it. But it's all a bit up in the air. There's no real guidelines there. It's all up in the air. You could end up. I can imagine in a situation where if you did implement it and people were moaning about it, you end up wasting a lot of time explaining your logic to them. Whereas if it's a best practice which is laid out as a kind of an advisory or whatever, then ICANN is subtly recommending it without making it binding. Making it binding, yes, that would be probably a more forceful, a stronger message to send. But I think this is quite a good. I think this is quite a good compromise. I mean, what you're saying is you're making it so that it's considered a best practice, and so that most registrars will probably do it anyway. At least that's my reasoning, anyway. Thanks.
Thanks, Michele. Simonetta.
What I like about this proposal is that it actually finds a nice compromise to what we had just been talking about with the whole proxy conversation and all these things, because one way to achieve this, you give your authorization for the sale very early on, and then you don't have to do anything at the point in time where a transfer is happening, is exactly by using this FOA give it upfront when you list the name for sale, and then it kind of stays there until maybe the name sells. Whereas, and that's an opt-in choice that someone is making with a registrar and or with a marketplace like Cedo or NameMedia, versus other registrants that might not even think about listing their names for sale could have something and set up in their registrar system where the FOA isn't saved and stored for any continuous amount of time and expires quicker and or whatever, but it kind of leaves choice and gives options. So I really like that this is flexible in that regard. In terms of the best practices for time limiting FOAs, if there were some things recommended, such as, for example, whenever a registrant information changes over, make sure that any pre-existing FOAs also get taken away. Stuff like that makes sense. And if we can come up with a list of these type items to support this, I really think this is a nice way forward.
Okay, thank you, Simonetta. I had a couple of comments here, and I also wanted to put myself at the end of the queue to turn it back over to Bob. I kind of agree with both Michaela and Mikey, and I know that may sound a little contradictory, so let me back that up a little bit. I think that I like this as a compromise position, and I think that it establishes something as a best practice, and certainly registrars who are concerned about the potential or real problems associated with unlimited FOAs would probably adopt this best practice. But I agree with Mikey that the conclusion is not necessarily supported by the language prior in the recommendation. In fact, and I'm just kind of being a little weird here, is I think that what we have here under Recommendation 1 and again with Recommendation 2 is everything that comes before the underlying sentence is actually a finding or a recap of the working group's findings, and then the recommendation is the underlined part. So I would recommend that we change our report to reflect that. Furthermore, I think that the survey also described whether or not there would be any negative impacts if this were adopted. And while I think that the language does state that there has the problem is not very well substantiated, I think that we're missing a bit here that the survey also said that there was probably no negative impact for time-limiting FOAs or that it would be minimal. So I think that needs to be captured in here because I think we're unbalanced if we leave that out. So those are my thoughts here. I think that we need to break up each of these paragraphs into finding and recommendation, and then the first section needs to be beefed up to balance out that there didn't seem to be any perceived harms. But otherwise, I think we can probably go into the initial report with this as it stands. Thanks. Turn it over to Bob then.
Okay, thanks, James. Excellent points, and I appreciate the guidance. I would be the first to admit that it doesn't really flow and it needs work, and so I appreciate the input. I think to Mikey's point, I think what I was trying to say, Mikey, is that the while there was support for the implementation of it, there was not necessarily the need. In other words, the stated problem was not significant, or even I would hold material, and therefore we sort of have our cake and eat it too by allowing the registrars the option to do it, or even making the recommendation that they do it, but not making it mandatory. For those people that do feel it's a problem, they do have the option to do it, but it's not necessarily mandated just because the reported problems, the incidence of reported problems is so low. So that was why I came up with what I came up with. But again, I'm just a first cut, and thank you all for your feedback on this one. James, we have Barbara in the queue. Should we take that one?
I'm sorry. Now I was on mute. Barbara, can you wrap this up on this one?
I hope so. I guess this is Barbara. I'm a little concerned that there's still some confusion over what the FOA is, because from what I'm hearing from Simonetta, it sounds like she wants to have just a general FOA. When you look at the language, that can be held indefinitely, and it's kind of assuming that the, I guess, registrant would somehow complete this, but it sounds to me, when reading through the language of the FOA, that it's really intended and would be kicked off at the registrar when they receive a request from a registrant who wants to move their name to them to really detail the specifics associated with that specific transfer from, you know, their registrant's registrar of record into the gaining registrar. So I guess I'm just a little confused, or I guess I'm questioning whether or not if there's still some confusion about what the FOA really is and what its intent is.
I'm not sure I know how to respond, Barbara. It's possible that we're confused about what the FOA, what the intent of the FOA is. What do you, where do you see us going off track?
Well, I guess, you know, when I'm looking at the language of the FOA, I mean, it basically just says very specifically, it says, you know, the current registrar of record for this domain is X. That's optional language. But it just says, the gaining registrar has received a request from whoever the entity is requesting the transfer via whatever the method is, whether it's email or fax or whatever. Well, actually, with the request for the email address and what have you, and it says on this date for us to become the registrar of record. So, I mean, it really is specifically related to a specific transfer request versus just, I know Simonetta was indicating, you know, something about being able to just have this on file for use later, and I guess it doesn't really seem to me to be the intent of the FOA to be used in that particular manner. So, I don't know, maybe Simonetta, you can expand on that a little bit. I mean, I don't want to completely sidetrack the entire call, but it just seems like there is some confusion that, to me, that I was under the impression that the FOA was really for a specific transfer from, you know, registrar B into, you know, the gaining registrar, registrar A, or what have you. So from that perspective, it seems like, you know, it the intent is for this specific transfer only, and it does make sense to time limit it to a degree. I'm happy to leave it up to the registrars if they want to implement it as a best practice. I do feel that it would be a good best practice, but that's just my opinion, I guess. I'm not sure if there's anything you really can't answer to that, James.
I see your concern, and I could just, if I could just maybe hope to address it quickly, I'm probably going to open a can of worms here, but it has been, I think, a practice for a while now, at least in the aftermarket registrar space, to get approval or an FOA in advance, and then when the transfer occurs, to then execute the FOA with the date and the gaining registrar at that time, but understanding that there's no need to go back then and reconfirm that with the registrant. So I think that this has been done to kind of, if you can think of it as, you know, like with real estate, where you would list a piece of property and then you would pre-authorize the, in this case, the registrar acts almost as an agent to process that transaction. And then they have this sort of, I want to say like a pre-authorization document to go ahead and sell that. You know, I don't know that it's right or wrong. I know that it's fairly prevalent currently, and maybe that's not something that the registry has a lot of visibility to. But I see Bob and Simonetta in the queue, and I note that we have 7 minutes left in our call. I think what we need to do, especially with this recommendation, is perhaps give Barbara and Mikey an opportunity to weigh in before it's included in the initial report. And if there are others on the mailing list that feel strongly as the way they do, then perhaps we can break it down into options, whether that's best practice / mandatory, and see where the comments come down. Bob, would you be willing to take us into recommendation two?
Yes, absolutely. And again, on this one, you know, a little, probably on a little less firm ground, just because it's not the necessarily the space that I operate in. But recommendation two was obviously the IN ID versus proprietary ID, and the work group notes that under the current system we have an ID from ICANN and a proprietary ID from some registries. While most registrars hadn't reported problems from the use of proprietary IDs, the majority felt that standardization would simplify the transfer process. We also noted that the impending release of new TLDs will introduce potentially hundreds of new proprietary IDs into the system. I guess we could infer from that further complicating matters. As such, the recommendation is that new registries standardize on IANA IDs. We recommend also that the existing registries that currently use proprietary IDs switch to IANA, but be allowed to continue to use their proprietary IDs. And finally, the workgroup recommends that the option to maintain the use of proprietary IDs be reviewed in 24 months and reconsidered. So I hope that's I hope that's clear. Again, first pass at the wording. At this point, I'll open it up for comments.
Thanks, Bob. Just a quick comment here. Again, I would ask that we break this into finding a recommendation similar to structuring the other one. And I think that you're correct. You've identified something here, which is that as a registrar, our concern is that the new GTLDs would all adopt their own little schema and that we would have to manage all of that. It might actually be more work to fix it with the legacy folks. So I think the idea of having them grandfathered in would probably make a lot of sense. I would prefer that we have more of our registry reps on the call. I know we have Barbara, which is great, but I think that Paul and Roy probably should weigh in on this topic as well. And then the only thought would be, I'm not sure if we're married to the concept of 24 months or if we just want to say reviewed and, you know, in the future or something, or perhaps at the end of this process to see if it's working. So those are just my comments here. And I don't know if this is a topic that's particularly controversial, but I kind of like the compromise of grandfathering existing, but new GTLDs should adopt the IANA ID as a standard. Were there any other thoughts or comments on this before we proceed? My goodness. An empty queue, but Barbara has pointed out in the chat that she still has concerns. Okay, so we're making progress here, and clearly we're running up against those issues that people feel very strongly about and that we have split opinions, and that's good. That means that we have boiled the oceans of all the possible permutations and boiled them down to two or three positions on these critical questions. We're about ready to hit the top of the hour. I see some of that is going to drop off, but I wanted to just touch on a couple of things. First off is that we are pushing to get some updated draft of the initial report. So, you know, the folks who are on the Agile process team or even the working group in general, if you could weigh in on those items that we identified in Simonetta's update. And then Mikey and maybe some others sort of feel fairly strongly about the first recommendation of this group. So please weigh in on the mailing list so we can incorporate those into a new draft of the initial report that we can release before our next call, and that we can discuss that. And then I think that beginning next week and the week prior, our goal will be to review that initial report. And we're going to have to do a lot of homework here because if we go through the initial report on the call, we're going to run out of time. We have a document publication deadline that we're going to have to meet fairly shortly. And so we're going to ask that everyone please read the report offline and then come to the call prepared with comments because we're going to go through that fairly quickly. Second thing is that this is a holiday weekend in the U.S. I know a lot of folks take a three-day weekend and they either add the the Friday or the Tuesday and make it a nice four-day mini vacation. I just wanted to let folks know that while I'll be traveling over the weekend, I will be on the call next week. But if you know now that you're not going to be attending next week's call, I strongly urge you to please submit your comments as quickly as possible, either on these open questions or on a draft initial, and so that we can get them on the record even if you're not here next week. So with that, we'll go to Marika. Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note that I think it might be easier if the different parts that we've discussed today, that we keep them for now as separate documents, as it will be easier just to circulate those on the mailing list and produce different drafts and leave the rest of the initial report, of which I circulated the latest version on Monday, as a separate document. I'm really encouraging people to already look at that, because I think those pieces are all ready as they are. I think this is what we're looking at now. These two new parts, those are the ones in flux and where we need to finalize and do some wordsmithing. So if people can already focus on as well the other document and provide any comments or edits they have or anything they think is missing, so I can already start working on that as well. And then I'll make updates based on the comments that will come in today to the proposed text for the Charter 8 question. And I'm assuming that that Bob hopefully can do the same, and I'm happy to support there on the recommendations for B and C, so we can keep on circulating those to the mailing list based on the feedback that is received. And I think, as we discussed in some of the items where we don't have disagreement or where we have disagreement, we might want to opt into outlining the two different positions with some rationale and specifically encouraging people to provide input that will hopefully then in the next stage will help the working group come to some kind of conclusion or agreement on what the recommendation should be.
Okay, thanks, Marika, and I agree. Can we send both of these documents as well as the draft initial to the mailing list and specifically call out those items where we want folks to weigh in on those two separate documents, and then we can build them into the initial report?
Yes.
Okay, with that, I know that we've got some folks that need to drop off, and it is the top of the hour. I think we've made a lot of progress here, folks. I think we are getting close to a structured report, something. We're going to have a lot of things to talk about when we get to Prague, and I think that's exactly where we wanted to be at this point. We may be shorting ourselves a little bit in our timeline to review the report, but I would say that just means we're not going to have bedtime stories and read it to one another over teleconferences, which is probably a more efficient use of our time anyway. So please watch the mailing list. For those of you who are traveling or whatever, stay safe, and we'll catch up next week same time. Thanks.
Thank you, James.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James.